welcome back to another episode of the Geek Whisperers. You're here with Matt Brender,
John Mark Troyer,
and I'm Patty Bouvier.
Oh, that's so strange. Amy is recovering from the not so distant past of Cisco Live. How did Cisco Live treat you, at least other than your vocal cords, which sound pretty beat up?
Yeah, I sound like the Marge Simpson sisters, if you didn't know that name by heart. So don't talk badly about MacGyver.
Okay, we'll let you hang out in the background and try not to creep us out this episode. But speaking of creepy people, we have a wonderful guest that we're actually very happy jumped on. Joe Onasek, thank you for joining us today. Would you introduce yourself to everybody?
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, even as creepy as I am. I'm Joe Onasek.
And what do you do, Joe?
I am currently a technical marketing engineer for the ACI and Nexus 9000 products at Cisco.
Fantastic. Yeah. And we brought you on in particular because you said currently, which is apropos because it's one of the questions of when will you get fired for what you say on the internet? But we won't make this just about Joe. It's more we want to dig in today about different types of branding and how some people personally and some companies professionally can really push the envelope and have an edgier approach to thing and just discuss whether you're somebody that wants to decide to do so yourself and just talk about field trials. John, what are your thoughts on some of the different approaches to authentic marketing these days?
I try to speak with an authentic voice. I think that's kind of turns out to be one of my superpowers. I speak for corporations like a human being. Sometimes I say four-letter words, a little salt and pepper there and now and then, and that makes people giggle, so I do that on purpose. I also try not to make fun of my own company that I'm working for, but I sometimes make fun of stupid marketers and things like that, which again is kind of a tribal marker. I try to speak honestly, and so maybe set this up. Joe, you seem perfectly nice to me. We don't really know each other very well, but is there a particular approach that Joe takes to social media, or at least Twitter?
I don't know that it's really an approach. I guess my approach to Twitter has kind of evolved with me over time. It was originally kind of a business thing. I was, you know, researching IT and trying to communicate with the people that were in IT. And then I started letting out a little more of my personality, which is gruff and hard to deal with under the covers. And then it kind of took off from there, and I've embraced it and become more and more antisocial on Twitter.
Honest, they're all putting these in nice marketing terms. You are the poster boy for what we would coach people not to do on Twitter, and yet it works.
I can see that.
So yeah. I'm going to ask the question, do you think of it as a caricature? Because you said it kind of evolved and grew.
Yeah, I would say it's an amplification of my natural tendency to be an ass.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I can not think of anyone else on Twitter or any social media platform that will more immediately retweet something offensive said about them.
Well, I mean, obviously Joe is joking, and this is his sense of humor. And Joe is actually very self-deprecating. The running joke is someone will say something like Joe is an ass, and Joe will retweet it and say, of course. So that's very self-deprecating. You know, there's other kinds of assholeness that are not self-deprecating, so it's very disarming. But are there some examples of stuff Joe has done, or maybe we can include them in the show notes or something? But I don't know. Are there, like, Joe's greatest hits or something that I should know about?
And you are referring to him in the third person like he does for himself. So, well done.
When you're this great, you have to refer to it in the third person.
Yeah, I think we'll have to troll through and put some in the actual show notes. But I guess just to sum it up, Joe, I think you're a great example of a different kind of branding. As Amy said, she does a lot of executive training, and she would train the opposite of what you do. As many of us have chosen to do, we avoid certain types of language and certain conversations, and you embrace them fully. So it's more of an edgy personal brand that you've evolved into. And we just were really interested in getting you on the Geek Whisperers and talking about it out loud. It's interesting to hear that you said it evolved with you. Do you remember any particular pivot point where you're just like, this is what I'm going to be, and this is it?
A lot of it was accidental, but I think one of the pivot points was there was an analyst company that had written just a completely garbage test report. And there were a few of us that were tearing apart the test report, and at which point the CEO of said analyst company contacted me as some lowly blogger that nobody cared about with this email complaining about it. And we went back and forth three or four emails. To the end, he ended up correcting my spelling and several other things from my email, including my grammar, which is notoriously bad. So at that point, I kind of made this transition from what I was doing before to I wanted to be this ass. And so I posted the entire email thread with a thank you note from correcting my grammar to my blog. And it was quite popular. So I began to embrace that attitude.
Wow. Amy, as someone that has a great deal of experience with starting bloggers, growing them, helping unicorns in need, what do you say to that?
Well, I have to take a page out of a recent book. We did an improv for business class for our Cisco champions at Cisco Live. And as Joe was talking, I'm thinking that's sort of the nod and the wink there. Is one of the key underpinnings of improv is you say yes and. So whatever happens on stage, you don't stop it. So if someone corrects your grammar, instead of going into a fiery rage, you say yes and you turn the volume a little more. So it's interesting. Joe, do you find yourself doing that even on purpose? Because it is very disarming and it changes the conversation.
Yeah, and I think that falls into the self-deprecating humor and everything else. It can be a great tool for that whole purpose of disarming. And especially when you come off as arrogant as I am, you got to put some juxtaposition with something else in there to not be completely hated.
And that's the really interesting point as well, right? That I think you balance out yourself in this way that despite you being caricature-like or some of the conversations being caricature-like, there's still this sense of authenticity. And while it's not exactly the same thing, it reminds me of a really good book called Different that we'll post a link to. One of the terms that the author brings up is this idea of hostile branding. It's this approach where basically attacking the same problem from a different angle can actually infuse it with more power as opposed to seeming like you're just trying to negate other people.
Hmm. And now, hostile implies some sort of malicious intent. Is this just being a little bit contrarian?
I think it's best by example. And the one that really sticks out that I think you've all seen before, it has to do with like the Volkswagen bug. There are just iconic ads that from the 60s where the bug is calling itself a lemon and saying like, think small instead of thinking big. And just this idea that their marketing approach flies in the face of what everyone else is trying to do at that time, where they fill every little piece of the paper that they have available to them and really push on all the different stats and details of their car. And this is just, here's what it is. And it's more interesting the less we give you and the more different it seems.
Works for me.
Hostile marketer. Are you a hostile brand?
I try to be pretty straightforward, but that's what works for me. And I try not to be so snarky because every time it makes me uncomfortable. But again, that's me. So I think being a contrarian is a smart move. So you're not on brand message. I applaud that. Think about all the VPs we know and above, executives that are on brand message all the time. When they get on stage, you can just go to the bathroom because nothing interesting is ever going to come out of their mouth. So
I call it the army of retweeters.
Oops. Or,
well, this may have been a point made by somebody on this podcast the other day. If all you're going to do is take a suit with a stick up their butt and overly prep them with the message that they had no idea what was going on, why are they bothering even to present? Anyway, that aside, I think I was going somewhere with this little rant. So, Joe, you're not on message, but do you feel like you ever turn people off if people don't get the joke?
Oh, I turn people off constantly. I get at least a once a week purposeful unfollow for turning somebody off the way in which I message, speak, or discuss something. I embrace it. That's what the unfollow button's for. You either like my feed or you don't, but it's always an option.
Do you think they're reacting to a joke or an actual, like, God, you're an idiot, you know, I can't be, or, you know, you're a liar or something? You know, there are occasionally you do react to people as well, I think.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's because I come off too belligerent. I think sometimes people definitely think I'm an idiot, and I think sometimes it's just, you know, a miscommunication of the joke.
Little sideline to add some color commentary, because there are days whenever people tease me and say my other job is being the Joe Onosik Wrangler. And we talk about often what people are like on a platform versus in real life. And a story Joe can't well tell about himself, though, is when I hold some tech event, Joe is one of the prime unicorns I'm asked to bring because of all people want to meet. they want to see for themselves, what is this person like in real life? Because they've seen the persona on Twitter. They just have to know for themselves.
They're just setting themselves up for disappointment.
See, there you go. There you go.
You're, it's like on the band.
You're like lead sled dog on the hottest, most strategic product at Cisco. You're doing fine. Well, Amy, Joe Handler, does Joe's management chain get angry emails sent to them about Joe?
I get angry emails sent to me about Joe.
And no, Amy is not my manager.
Working on it. That's the ongoing wrestling match.
CC'd with the VPs, yeah.
We actually had a really funny experience a few months back. There was 40 of Cisco's top data center engineers in a room, and we were training them up on the product. And so my senior vice president comes in to close it out and speak to them for a little while. And she's trying to engage them to be more out in social media talking about the product and engage in the blogs and the rest. And she says to the room, I get emails of Joe Onosik's tweets. And everyone just stops dead. My face turns cherry red. Everyone's waiting for the hammer to drop. And she says, I think it's great.
Well, that was going to be my next question. They support you. But it sounds like great that you're out there moving and shaking. I was going to say punching, but maybe moving and shaking is better.
I think there's definitely some wariness to it. And then they keep a close eye at many different levels within the company. And I'm sure I could go far enough off reservation that it would become a problem. But they're allowing it to happen, which is actually a very, very, very cool thing about Cisco.
Well, and let's drill down a little bit. Some things that we have told people is authenticity only works if you can back it up.
Mm.
And again, Joe, I'll let you speak to this instead of being your mouthpiece as well as your handler and your future manager. But you have to be factual. I mean, we've all talked about that. You have to be truthful. You have to be sincere. To your credit, Joe, you take what you say and you back it up. And I've seen you be wrong and apologize for it. Not everybody remembers those moments, but when I do coaching and when I talk about people developing their personal brand online, again, Joe's style that, and I really do like the term hostile marketing because I think it gets you kind of in the spirit of what we're talking about very quickly. It's good shorthand, but that personality isn't for everybody. Because you do have to have that equal dose of humility. If you're not ready to say, I'm wrong publicly and loudly, then probably going at it that way is not the right persona for you.
No, and that's one of the things I always try and do. And I don't know if it comes off or not, but I try and maintain integrity. I don't preach about products I don't actually believe in. I don't work for products I don't actually want to sell. If I'm wrong, I'll be belligerent and argue anything till the end of the day. But if I'm wrong and you prove me wrong, I try to admit it. I try and let you know. And I've opened up blogs with crow in my mouth with some senior security professionals in our industry because of that. If I'm going to make a bold statement and I'm going to argue it, when you prove me wrong, I'm not going to be a jerk about it and just let it go quiet. I'll let you know you were right.
Yeah, I will say, Joe, I mean, you back it up with not only with what would you just say, Amy? You're saying he backs it up with humility, but he also backs it up with technical knowledge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it's interesting. I believe in the concept of yin and yang and balance in the force, if you will. And I think darkness has to be balanced with light. So if you're going to be belligerent and you're called out, I think what would get people ostracized and would get you fired and would get you disowned by the community is if you never said you were wrong, if you didn't have the technical chops to back it up, et cetera. So again, as people are sort of considering what is their approach, how do they differentiate themselves? Who are they online? When you think about that, it may seem easy to be the loud voice in the room, but are you willing also to be the most apologetic one?
Yeah. Wow. That's a great line.
I'll give an example of actually where Joe's stuff worked. And this was just a couple days ago. Somebody had written a blog post about a slide at Cisco Live, and it was comparing Cisco to VMware, of which I am an ex-employee and still a stockholder. So, but Joe said, no, you're wrong. It's a technical detail for this audience. And Joe, you did it in kind of a mean way. And I thought, well, boy, that's a really harsh way to respond to that. I think that was kind of inappropriate. I got halfway to either DMing you or Amy, one of the two, to add to the list of people that have DM'd Amy about you. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. And then you like went on to explain in another tweet exactly what you meant. And I was like, oh, yeah, if it is built into the hypervisor, then it does mean it'll have to have a separate code base for every hypervisor. I added more context because I know more about the product, but I was like, oh, he did have a point. I would have skated over that had you not presented your argument so ferociously.
And I get caught by that on Twitter quite a bit, is because you only with only 140 characters, yeah. it depends on how long it is before you type your next message. So occasionally people come off in a totally different way than their total message or conversation will look like after they type that second or third tweet.
It is easy to take something out of context. That's for damn sure.
So what gives you the confidence to keep going with it, Joe? Is it just the reinforcement? It sounds like you have the right crowd at the Cisco leadership level that understands your style and your approach and what it does for them. And then also it's working for you positioning wise. Is there ever a day you're just like, man, I just want to be nice to people on the internet?
There's never a time where I want to be nice to humans, but let me also put in the disclaimer. I can guarantee that the Cisco leadership does not support my tweets. They just don't fire me for my tweets. There's a big difference there. So I gain the confidence in the fact that, you know, the worst thing that can happen to me for what I say on Twitter is I get fired. And this is an industry with a lot of opportunity and a lot of jobs and a lot of things. So if I do get fired for it, I'll move on and find something else that'll be interesting to me.
That's
it's
fair.
More of working without a net that provides the confidence.
Do you ever have a second thought, or have you ever deleted a tweet upon reflection?
I love this 20 questions.
That was an interesting one. So I have definitely second thoughted some things. Normally I don't delete tweets. I'll make a, you know, public apology, public correction, something like that, rather than delete it. There have been a few rare occasions where I've deleted tweets, and I definitely get some great mentoring. I've got a couple of fantastic VP at Cisco mentors. Amy's another one that'll come to me and let me know when I'm going off too strong, or check on what's going on, because they know the difference between normal belligerent Joe and he's taking it too far, Joe, and they'll kind of help keep me in check.
All of us, right? We're human beings operating without a net. So I think all of us have either thought twice before clicking, or there's lots of tweets I delete before I click send. Often, yeah, they're like too sarcastic, or they just I've sent too many jokes that day. So I think you're human, I guess, Joe, just like the rest of us, right? That's what freaks people out about Twitter, though, right? Another straw person that we make fun of on this podcast, right, is our marketing compatriots who are not used to operating live without a net and without approval, multiple chains of approval on Twitter, right? It kind of freaks them out because, you know, stuff sometimes comes out of your mouth, anybody's mouth. That's
well, I got asked that question just this week. I was working on I did a training, and I don't remember, it may have been Joe or Matt who actually said this to me, but the concept, exactly that concept of, I'm afraid to tweet because what if I say something wrong? And my answer was, again, I feel like it was taken from one of you guys. If not, somebody help me remember who said this. But if you have ever talked to a customer or to anyone in public as a representative of Cisco and not been overwhelmingly nervous about it, you're qualified. You would no more face punch somebody at a EBC or trash talk at a cocktail hour. You're perfectly capable of tweeting appropriately. Again, that was some language somebody gave to me. And just passing that on to this group, it was amazing the effect it had. Everybody kind of had that moment of, I talk to the public as a Cisco representative or whomever you work for all the time. Why is this different? I know it is slightly different. I'm being a bit facetious because it's written down and it's not as ephemeral, maybe as a comment and an offhand comment. But as we've seen in recent news, offhand comments can easily be recorded and come back to be documented. Good judgment is good judgment no matter what the medium. And if you're already exhibiting that in other parts of your job, you're perfectly capable of doing it on Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to trust yourself in public. If you have a position that is at all customer facing, from pre-sales to post-sales to being an advocate like many of us are, to being community members, you're all engaging in this way that represents the company, whether you put it in your profile that you don't represent the company or not, you are. And it's true with what you say as well. So there's a certain accountability to it. And that's why it's really interesting that other people go about it in different ways, like our friend Joe here.
And then I think it comes down to you're all human. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to tweet something that maybe you shouldn't have tweeted, and you move on from that, right? You learn from it. You move on, just like with anything else in life. As long as you don't go insane overboard like the marketer who made the notoriously bad tweet before jumping on a flight to South Africa and woke up 12 hours later to no job and an entire world against her.
Yes. Yeah. And we can always link to that. So that stupidity, and that's what it is. Like, there are levels of inappropriateness that you can't recover from, and we have to just accept that in our lives. But there is a day-to-day gray area that we explore every time we use social media, every time we talk to a customer. And the more practice I get, the better I get at knowing where those lines are. And social is another way of me to practice.
Well, since we have Joe on the line here, who is, I was actually just Googling bad unicorn images for use in a future blog post. There are some juicy ones. Since we do have Joe on here, who is kind of a unicorn, he's a technical marketer, engineer and marketer, and is active on social media and is, you know, has had a really interesting career. I mean, Joe, how do you feel that social has impacted your career, if at all?
I think it's had a very positive influence. I've gotten to meet some of the great people in the industry that I never would have met if it hadn't been from social media. One of my mentors at Cisco, a VP, is a guy that we met through social media. Now we're good friends, colleagues. Just the people, the connections I've been able to make, the industry people I've been able to touch, I never would have been able to have the same conversations and connections if it hadn't been from social media. And I think it can be a really powerful tool. I think at this point, it also, with my personal brand, I'm sure it probably also narrows down some of my options, but opens up other doors as well.
Well, I guess you're right. If it's not a fit, if somebody doesn't get your sense of humor or whatever, right? You're operating at a very high level, but I suppose it's always a fit, right? If you don't get along with personality-wise.
It's right. Good. I think there are elements to what the book Different talks about when it comes to hostile marketing that I think are relevant to this. And the first one is just the amount of authenticity that it feels it brings to the table. And I think the humility that Joe balances, and or even while being over the top aggressive at times, but then being totally apologetic when appropriate and self-deprecating, there's authenticity balanced somewhere in the middle of there that people really connect with. And that leads right into the other part, that it creates a cult-like appeal that some people attach to that idea. I know we've explored here in Geek Whispers that we're all representatives of companies at different ways, and some people will connect to different people in the brand ecosystem. And maybe there's another part of the puzzle that just some people aren't as confident and comfortable approaching.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of that personal brand is the company you work for is going to have some amount of say in what that brand is and how much you go. I mean, even me, with my last company, we were a channel partner, so we resold from many, many vendors. They asked me to stop blogging or tweeting anything negative about a product for any of our partners. Now, I could be pro any product I wanted, and I didn't have to be pro for products I didn't want to be, but they didn't want me to specifically attack any given product from one of our partners. That's fair enough. It didn't hurt my brand, but it was something I had to curb. And there are some here with this current company that are things that I will no longer say because I've been asked to in certain fashions.
Good. Yeah, the balance of life there.
I've long since wanted to do a chart where we talk about neutrality and the value perceived neutrality has to influence. And I feel like there's another vector we could... I'm looking at you, Matt, my favorite numbers and presentation person, about the relationship between hostility and authenticity. I wonder, and I know you posed this question on Twitter, and I'll be curious to continue this conversation with the community at large. And again, we're using hostility in a fairly term of art way. You're not out punching people in the face. But does that increase both your authenticity and therefore your influence? Because you don't just retweet blindly or love everything.
From my perspective, I would say it does. I would say that, you know, somebody that only has positive opinions of everything is fake. There's something they're holding back. Nobody's that cheery. And I think having a balance at some level of any type is going to be very important to being authentic.
But to go with the counter example, no one
that's Matt's job
hates-
too.
Yeah, no one quite hates people as much as you pretend to at times.
No, I really do.
You're consistent. I got to say that. I'm looking at some of your tweets.
So, John, what do you think? Do you think if somebody has that hostile or kind of curmudgeonly personality, does that make you think they're more credible?
Oh, I think it works in the short term. It certainly does. You know, it also kind of depends, right? If you work for a vendor, there's certain things you can say. I've heard from other VAR employees of consultings, value-added resellers that are channel partners for a number of different companies, that there is some politics involved. They often might prefer a piece of kit, but they're not publicly allowed to say it. And of course, then usually the reason they usually prefer a piece of kit is that because at customer after customer, they do the requirements analysis and it actually is just a better product or a better fit for the customers they deal with. And they often can't talk about that in public. So there is a certain amount of, it's not even dissembling, but there's a certain amount of politeness that does go on. Being a curmudgeon, sure. Being a sarcastic curmudgeon, it makes you a truth teller. You're telling truth to power. It puts you in a certain trope role that is easily identifiable and from everywhere from sitcoms to Greek plays, probably.
I think one of the cool things that you were talking about your friends at VAR is that you have certain things that they can say or not say. I think one of the big things about that, if a company's going to ask you to curb, like the example I used earlier, they asked me to curb saying anything negative about any of our partners. At the same time, they let me go out and talk positively about any given product I wanted. And when a competing vendor would come to them and say, he can't say that, they'd back me up all day long. It was positive, technically backed opinion of a product.
Mm-hmm.
So I think company also has to, if they're going to set boundaries or rules, they also have to protect that person when they're within those boundaries and rules too. It's a big piece of it.
Good lesson for social media strategy from a corporate standpoint. While it's totally fair that maybe you have to protect some of your more delicate relationships, still got to give people the leash to be technical subject matter experts. As we all know from reading everything from the Edelman Trust Barometer to just day-to-day life in the Twitter sphere, that people that are technical experts are more reliable, more trustable to their target audience. So you got to let them be that if you want them to succeed.
And what's the other option? Otherwise, you get all your technical experts creating anonymous personas online to say the same things they wanted to say, and you get no value from it as a company.
Yeah. Amen.
Okay. I have got a question. Joe, imagine a world in which we had to trade jobs for a day.
Suicide.
I would pay to see that.
I know, right? As I've been pondering this and thinking how we could make this happen because it would be so awesome. So you have to coach somebody on how to be on Twitter or on social media in general. What would be three tips you would give them?
I would tell them to randomly pick any 10 tweets that I've tweeted in the last year and make sure they never replicated anything close to that.
Okay, that's one.
The one thing I always tell people on Twitter is don't be a corporate brand. Have some personality. Add something about you. If you like soccer, tweet some about soccer. Talk about what you just did. If you're a runner or whatever it may be, have some personality in there because you're not going to get a following just as a corporate brand retweeter.
That's a great number two.
The third one would be to, you know, engage the people that you want to be engaged with. If you are going to send something, you know, if you have something interesting to say, then that person, no matter how much of a Twitter rock star they may be, will reply to you. You just have to keep engaging and putting out content that people want to read.
Holy crap, Amy. I think you could do it.
Perfect. He can have my job and I'll be his manager.
Joe, a number of open recs for social media marketers come across my desk every week. I'll start sending them to you.
Fantastic. Much appreciated.
They don't pay quite as well. But hey, Amy,
can I get into influence marketing? Because I really want to be where Amy is.
It's Amy's term. So if that's her role, you work for her, you can call yourself that.
But quarter for that.
Hey, Amy and Matt, we've been talking about this as a personal brand. Does this work for, and the book that you guys are referring to is about corporate brands. Does having an edgy corporate brand work? A, do we know any brands that do that? And B, do we distinguish that from being kind of hostile and competitor twit pissy?
Yeah,
that's where the language gets confusing, right? So Young Mi Moon, the author of Different, she calls it a hostile brand, but she thinks of the hostility more around the positioning of the product. So instead of saying like, oh, everyone should be excited that cars are getting bigger around the time where Hummers and SUVs were all the rage in America, the people behind the Mini Cooper said, think smaller, and went to the total opposite end of the spectrum. She considered that a type of hostility to the market. That's very different from, say, a brand, a corporation that is trying to be competitive in a negative way. So that sort of negative, I don't have a good term for it, John. I don't know if you could come up with one quickly, but when it comes down to it, I think they're very different things. I like it when a brand is hostile in the way that we've been talking about, where it realizes what it is and pushes for that being part of the paradigm, as opposed to just everyone competing to be a little bit better and all part of the same herd. But I think we could all agree that it's universally uninteresting when people get preachy and overly religious about how their tech is better just simply because they say so.
Or to say, like, especially in our industry where customer service is huge, I think that would be on balance a negative, that people would not want to deal with salespeople or the break fix people. Or I think we have seen over and over again that, like you said, a witty, tongue-in-cheek kind of product level cheekiness is one thing, but a company whose real bread and butter brand was actively hostile, I think, would not succeed over the long term.
Or arrogant, right? Nobody likes a person that's arrogant, and people don't like brands that are arrogant either.
Yeah, that's the word I was missing. I think arrogance is the, without a doubt, just despicable in branding. I don't particularly like it in people either. So maybe there is a correlation there.
Saying arrogance is a bad thing?
We're not talking to you right now, Joe.
Oh, okay.
No.
Confidence is a good thing. Arrogance is not so much.
You, Joe, how do you toe the line between confidence and arrogance? And do you think you do it successfully?
I don't think I do that successfully at all. I think I'm on the arrogant side of things more often than not. I don't consider it arrogance because, again, when you're this good, it's just confidence. But other people look at it differently.
What do you think, John, Matt? How would you coach somebody? Is that one of those – is that a coachable thing?
Yeah. I really think there are little aspects that we let out. So I guess one tip that was given to me by a community member that I honestly can't recall exactly when, but it just is part of the ethos that when I was starting my blog, I started to use the term, like, you know, my ideas, my stuff, my things. I was very focused on the fact that I was writing it. And somebody just said very briefly, like, people are reading your blog to kind of learn something with you. They know you're writing it. You don't need to remind them. This idea that whatever you're bringing to the table is actually, you can just say it and not make it about you or about ownership in any sort of way. So I think learning to take that part of the language out of your writing and make it more about us learning together is very trainable and a really fundamental skill that I've applied.
I'm going the other way, Matt. Joe doesn't have to do anything different, Amy. I read so many social media things like that give people rules about what is actually common sense and normal human interaction. 5 things to do in a tweet and 6 ways to blog a thing that people read. Rules are made to be broken, whatever. It's working for Joe. Joe doesn't need to change it. Boom. That's it. Drop mic.
Done.
Taking that to the bank.
Now, for anybody else, it's a bad idea. But for Joe, it's working.
No, that my thing is actually funny. That's even in speech, that my word can come off arrogant in a different way than you intended. I know when I first started here, I would say my team. And I meant my team as if I was the outfielder for a baseball team. The team I'm a part of was the one.
Right, right.
People took it as in, oh, you mean all those people work for you? Like, so I had to take that word out of my vocabulary and change it because it came off arrogant and in a totally different way than I intended it to come off or was thinking of it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's you just nailed it with a great example of why that little language and how people can interpret it is really powerful. So I think we've gone a little across the board here when it comes to branding of personal and professional and companies and individuals, arrogance and authenticity. What can we take away from all this, gang? What are your thoughts, Amy?
Be yourself. And when you can't be yourself, be a unicorn. No, I really do think it is it's the whole don't write checks your butt can't cash. For me, the example that Joe sets is if you're going to do it, be ready to pay the price for it. So it's a differentiating strategy. It's a different strategy. It's an interesting strategy. But if you're not willing to temper it with the humility and the technical acumen, then that might not be the way for you. So think about your own path. It's a risk-reward analysis.
Love it.
I think that, and that's all back to the integrity piece too. I mean, if I would be just as unsuccessful at trying to be Amy's Twitter persona as somebody would trying to be mine. If you're not yourself, it's just not going to come off.
We need to swap passwords. I think there might be a challenge here where we just tweet as each other for 2 hours.
That actually sounds like an interesting game.
We just have to be somewhere in the same place because we'll be giggling.
Yeah. And see who could tell.
That, yes. Okay, so world, we're not going to tell you when we're going to do it, but we're going to do that sometime.
The reminds me of an episode of Orphan Black. But hey, so Matt, mine would be know your room, know your audience, and then also do what works for you. And maybe, you know, this is working for Joe, and then maybe even not everybody has to like you. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to take away something that Amy just summed up really well, too, about being interesting. Be interesting. And then I think something I've really learned from Joe is follow through with it. be that person and don't shy away from it when things get tough or things get confusing. So with that, I think we've really explored something that I hope we dig into further about the different types of branding. But I really appreciate you joining us, Joe.
It was a pleasure being on. I really appreciate the invite.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. So where can people find you on the internet if they do, in fact, want to be part of your cycle?
So I am not recommended for human consumption, but if you decide to consume, it'd be definethecloud.net and at @JayOnasik on Twitter.
Hey, okay. Joe, I got a question. Do a lot of people think your name is John?
I get that one all that. I actually just answer to it now. It's far simpler than correcting people.
Because for a long time, I thought your name was John Is Sick. That was it.
Yeah, that's I was on Speaking in Tech, a podcast, and the photo they used on that was a picture of Amy's meme where you thought bubble yourself, and it was my name is Joe and I'm not sick.
Works for me. Thanks, Joe.
All right. Well, thank you all for another great week of the Geek Whispers. If you enjoy what you hear, or even if you don't, we would love to hear about it. So write us a review on iTunes or leave us a comment on our blog. Share it with a friend and add to the following and to the community. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Really appreciate you joining us, Joe, especially on such short notice. We know how busy you can be in the evenings. I don't know what I'm implying there. We should probably just cut that out.
Oh, no, you got to keep that.
That's B-roll gold.